This also brings about a very interesting conversation into how the App Store is currently being done. Many online developers and, of course, larger ones like Twitter and Google through YouTube, for instance, is now offering their services through two-tier payment packages, one through the App Store, which is normally 30 to 40% higher than the second tier, which is offered, say, for instance, on their website. The classic example is, of course, say, for instance, YouTube Premium, which offers family prices at 44 ringgit on the App Store instead of 33 ringgit if you buy straight from the website. Twitter Blue, for instance, has a two-tier pricing over in excess of 500 ringgit if you buy Twitter Blue yearly subscription on the App Store instead of 360 ringgit on the yearly subscription if you buy it straight from the website. So this kind of conversation does invoke that whole idea of whether or not the App Store indeed is taxing more to the larger developers in particular, and whether or not this is going to spell a new way of how things are being sold online. Is this the way forward when it comes to the future of the App Store? Is the dominance of the 30% so-called tax that App Store charges to developers, big and small, is nearing its end? 15 years on, the App Store is facing a lot of critical challenges, and these challenges need to be addressed in the coming months or weeks to come. In fact, ahead of the WWDC or WWDC that is scheduled to happen in Cupertino on June 15th, there's a lot of developers that are already talking about how they can offer two-tier pricing through the App Store and through their website. If this happens, then what would be the impact on consumers? Directly, of course, one would argue that cost would be lower, but indirectly, will privacy be maintained? Will the data security be maintained if it's offered outside of the App Store ecosystem? So there's a lot that needs to be conversed on this topic. Do check out my conversations on my own show, Notepad, with me, Ibrahim Sani, on these kind of conversations that takes place there as well. Now we move on to other news. The startup ecosystem in Malaysia is ranked 42nd in the Global Startup Ecosystem Index in 2021, which is a significant achievement considering the challenging environment faced by startups in Southeast Asia. The limited funding and cautious investor landscape makes it difficult for startups in the region as the global investment climate becomes a little bit more uncertain. Despite these challenges faced by Southeast Asian startups, there are positive factors that offer hope. The ASEAN region's strong macroeconomic performance, along with the support of dedicated investors and access to global capital markets, provide a lifeline for companies, especially startups, seeking a sustainable and profitable way of doing things. Consistent with also the announcement coming in from the Minister of Economy, Yang Mohamad Rafizi Ramli, earlier this week, that said that he intends to work collaboratively with other ministries, predominantly MITI, KKD, or the Digital and Communications Ministry, as well as other relevant ministries like the Ministry of Finance, in order to make Kuala Lumpur, if not Malaysia, a global hub or at least a regional hub for the ecosystem, the startup ecosystem. So this and more needs to be explored a little bit better. Joining us on the line live is Thaddeus Koh, the co-founder of E27. Thaddeus, maybe you can share with us some of the key factors that have led to the rapid growth and development of Southeast Asia's startup ecosystem in the past decade.
Hi. Thanks, Ibrahim. Very, very good morning to everyone, and thanks for hosting and having me here. Well, great first question, right? I mean, for Southeast Asia startups, we have raised about 2 billion in quarter one in this year. Although this is down from 25% from last quarter and a slight down of 50% from the last period in 2022, there's still a lot of potential here due to, well, we are the third largest population size for Southeast Asia in on a global scale, right? 460 million users, internet users in 2022. So there's a ton of opportunities here. And we are always a mobile-first economy here in Southeast Asia. There's plenty of opportunities, plenty of problems needs to be solved in multiple sectors that we want to explore through E27 and Echelon.
How has the emergence of innovative businesses and their business models contributed to the success of startups in this part of the world?
For this part of the world, many of the startups here focuses on mobile-first. Right, because simply everyone is on a mobile phone today. the mobile penetration here for Southeast Asia is one of the highest in the world, right? And now our young users, our young digital natives, they comprises about 30% of all consumption of digital services throughout Southeast Asia, right? So that model has created and have influenced many startups to really focus on the mobile first strategy, right? I think you covered the news on Apple earlier on. You can see that is one of the key opportunity for them to leverage on as a platform to reach out to more users beyond Southeast Asia to a global audience, right? With a mobile first, that allows Singapore companies, Malaysian companies, Indonesian companies to really grow, not just domestically, but also grow within the region when they are ready for that as well. So that strategy is solid, is strong. But right now, yes, there are some challenges in the ecosystem. We need to talk about sustainability. We need to talk about path to profits first. I think that's something that we can talk about more.
That's the thing. If we look at the trend, mobile first strategy, that has greatly benefited many of the startups in this part of the world. But as I also mentioned early on, things are looking to be different. A lot of developers are now thinking about offering their products and services outside, you know, trusted platforms like the App Store, largely because of the so-called, you know, 30% tax that App Store incur on developers. What's the future like when it comes to offering, I guess, online services? Mobile will still be the feature, but is it going to be going outside of the App Store, for instance?
Yeah, of course, of course. So let's talk about some of the fundamentals today, right? So the biggest theme that we need to push for this year's Echelon conference, right, is the aspiring entrepreneurs and the early stage startups, you need to be thinking about what's your path to profits. Think of it as your fundamentals, right? Think of your unique economics of your business. Well, App Store, is that the strategy that brings you fastest to this path? Or just general web services? Is that the alternative to bring you fastest to this path? I think when we look at the fundamentals, the investors have been saying, and we poll about 50 investors and talk about this, right? Everybody needs to look at how do you grow your business today? How do you look at it as a sustainable business? How do you work with partners? How do you work with investors in your country and your region to build a sustainable business? Before you think about growth in the region or on a global scale, let's look clearly on your business fundamentals. So with that, that forms your other strategies, right? Then that forms your, okay, where do you build your services? Where is the problem that you're trying to solve? And how? Which are the other regions, which are the countries that are suitable for your current strategy, right? But fundamentally, everyone needs to go back to a drawing board, especially for early stage founders, to think about business fundamentals, right? The cash model of pre-pandemic is not coming back. That is agreed by all the investors that we have spoken to. Right now, we have to look at your business fundamentals again, and how do you get there in the fastest way? So that's what we are advising all early stage founders to think about first and foremost today.
Business models are critical, of course. I agree with you, but of course, distribution is also important for startups that are looking at being a platform-driven business or trying to expound on retail businesses. App stores are actually quite critical to talk about. Do you feel that the ability for them to try and find greater distribution is also quite critical right now?
Of course, of course. So for distribution-wise, one of the key themes that we are pushing this year as well, right, as part of that theme of path to profitability, is the sense of collaboration in Southeast Asia. So we are a region of 10 countries, right? More than thousands of languages, if you include all the dialects, right? If you talk about the main six ASEAN countries, there are different challenges, there are different innovation needs, there are different corporates and governments trying to do start their corporate their journey. Some are a little bit more advanced, some of them are just starting off, right? There is a lot of opportunities to look into the landscape here and use that as a way to work with these corporates. How does it matter to distribution? Because that's how you introduce your products and services in the region. You need to go deep into many of these countries. When you're ready, only when you're ready to do that, you need to look into the landscape in that country. You need to look at your brand building. You really need to spend a good amount of 3 to 6 months time building up your brand, building up your talent team, hyper-localizing your service before it's ready for distribution, right? So that collaboration piece with governments, local government agencies are very welcoming. There are many programs and policies that's out there to welcome Malaysian startups to enter into Indonesia, booming markets like Vietnam, in Philippines as well. These are the three key emerging markets, right? They are there. So the advice here is, before distribution, you really need to get your core fundamentals again, your home base sorted out. And when you grow into the region, you need to go deep, right? You need to spend that 3 to 6 months time flying in and flying out. Some founders even move all the way there, right? To really build that solid team, the solid brand, and making sure that the product and service has an extremely good fit in the local culture, in consumer or business behavior, before they start to think about the distribution in the local markets. Yeah. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done before they jump into the distribution side.
Another area that I want to ask is on startups that do not see retail businesses as their main core segment. They focus on industrial customers. They focus on government-to-government customers. A company that I can mention, of course, is Aerodyne, for instance, that do not look at Malaysia or even Southeast Asia as a market. They're pretty much everywhere across the globe, in the MENA region, in South America. Do you think that these kind of founders would be a little bit more unique and you know, different because they're not targeting, say, retail customers? They don't really care about distribution. All they care about are global markets, and they're based on infrastructure, say, for instance. And therefore, the growth of profitability is actually quite high in this space. Do you feel that this kind of startups would tend to be the bigger ones to be betted on in the next, say, for instance, decade to come?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think it really depends on the market. For Aerodyne, we did a very good interview with the CEO earlier this week, right? It was really to focus on his advice as well. Same advice, right? In this period of time, what's your advice for early stage companies? But for Aerodyne, right? Yes, they started off. We had them at Echelon for many years. They supported us as well. The key thing for them is, yes, it's a global market. For them, it really depends on their business and the core fundamentals, right? They started way earlier than the companies today. Of course, when you cannot find that product fit here in Southeast Asia, you have to look further. Look at the global markets, look at where your demand is. There are still snippets of different sectors, of course, that needs this kind of growth, that needs global scale networks in order to succeed. I think this is where Aerodyne has done fantastically well in reaching out to their core markets, in identifying the product market fit. But I would say for majority of many of the tech founders here today in our platform that is coming for Echelon, they are looking at first and foremost domestic market, getting the fundamentals right, and then they are looking at Southeast Asia as a regional growth. I think Southeast Asia as a really key emerging market, it's a market for Asians. And if you look at the news, making headlines of funding, of growth, these are Southeast Asian companies. So Aerodyne, I would say, is a special company. They have done fantastically well on a global level. They have very strong networks to support them in their growth journey. But majority of the companies will still have to start domestically or in the region before they can succeed on a global level.
Let's talk about the funding pipeline right now. Early stage funding seems to be plenty when it comes to VCs trying to support this particular stage. Even Series A can be argued as plentiful when it comes to Southeast Asia. But moving forward, right, Series B onwards, there seems to be a hiccup in terms of how VCs can actually enter this space into the growth stage kind of element. Do you agree with this kind of thesis? Do you agree that this is a stage where for founders, they will have to think differently on how to get Series B onwards to be funded?
Mm. Yeah. So share a little bit of a story, right? So back in April, I was actually in KL, Kuala Lumpur, for our own meetup event with the local stakeholders of startups, corporates, and governments as well, government agencies. So we had a conversation about this, and we invited a upcoming to Series B or pre-Series B startup, right, to talk about this issue, right? Yes, there is that early stage investment winter right now. And the reason why the B rounds are much more difficult today is because, back to the same thing, the investors are now looking at the fundamentals. And the problem is, if you raise your Series A in the last couple of years and 2 years, right, and your plan was, look, I'm going to revenue first, right? I'm going to be getting my market shares, right? But then when the interest rate starting to rise, the VCs are telling you, okay, you can't just grow like that now. You got to change your strategy and you got to pivot now and look at your fundamentals, your unit economics. Tell me the path to profitability. So it's not that the VCs doesn't want to deploy the B round funds. It's because they're waiting for many of the Series A companies to pivot their strategy. So if you are the Series B or pre-Series B companies, let's say in last year, you're safe because many of them we spoke to, they have raised their funds. They left their cash in the bank. They didn't spend so much. They were very prudent because the conversation has started this in the tech industry that you need to think about your profitability today, back last year, right? So all the Series B were careful about it. So when they are raising the Series C, they are in much better, stronger financial position to command a better valuation. But if you are in that spot of a Series A company, that's where the trouble is, right? That's where you're a little bit in a limbo. But there are many, many opportunities still. Many VCs are opening up their doors to speak to these Series A companies to help them adjust, to help them pivot. There are many different forums that's out there to help advise Series A startup founders on how do you actually do this. It's really a tough problem for many of them because they are really in this problem spot. And I think as an ecosystem builder like E27, our job is to invite some of these guys, have a conversation about it, find their core partners, find their next round VCs that can advise them. Not say invest now, but advise them and bring them forward to their B rounds. That's what I think personally for why this issue exists. Yeah.
Thaddeus, very quickly, run through with us Echelon Asia Summit's top 100 startup stage, specific benefits that entrepreneurs get from this platform.
For the last 10 years, we have 100 companies that we source from Southeast Asia. Traditionally, we have been traveling to all the key cities to meet the tech founders, to welcome them for this competition. These are all early stage companies, pre-Series A. And the whole point, right, is, look, if we are talking about Southeast Asia, we need to show Southeast Asia. And we are trying to show it through the innovative products and services from these startups from all the different countries into one platform, into one event for 2 days. Right? So they'll be pitching 100 of them over on one stage in 1 day. So everyone has a good 3 to 5 minutes to really talk about their products and services. They have a stand, you know, investors, corporates,
governments, and can talk to them after their pitch is done. Once 100 companies done, we have our top 10 and we recognize who is the winner from there. And this is judged by over 30 VCs, well-known VCs. They are funding rounds in the early stage rounds from seed to pre-Series A all the way to a pre-B round. So that is, in essence, our top 100 competition. And we have recognized and seen through many companies from Tokopedia to Gojek previously in 2012, 2013. Our first time in Jakarta. In Malaysia, we have Aero9 before. And many other Malaysian companies like Dropee. Dropee is a B2B marketplace startup from Malaysia at the Series A round as well. These are the companies that we have showcased through the platform. And we hope to invite everyone to join us for this event to look at what's next, what are the trends, what are the sectors, who are the startups, and who are the founders that is heading these companies.
Thank you very much, Thaddeus Koh, the co-founder of E27, who joins us live from Singapore. That's all that we have for you for this hour. Do stay on with us on Astro Awani as we bring you more urgent and critical analysis on the events that are happening within this country as well as internationally. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.